College. Good afternoon. This is WHFR Dearborn. You're listening to the show called Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway. And today, my special guest is Versandra Kinnebrew, and she is a life changer. Versandra, thank you very much for being here and doing the show.
Thank you, Mike. I'm happy to be here.
Well, that's great. Now, I often ask my guest how they want to be introduced. And a lot of times, you know, they give me a small book on what they want said about them. And of course, I've got to chop it down to make it a lot shorter than perhaps what they give me. But when I asked you, you said, just tell everybody that I'm a life changer. So that's a great, great description. It's simple, yet very powerful. And what I want to know is, how are you a life changer?
Well, I can just tell you, first of all, that the reason why that name just really stood out to me is I was looking at a television show one evening, and they were interviewing Halle Berry. And the purpose of the show was to basically showcase or show the world everything that she was doing with her philanthropy work. And they were talking about the fact that she's an actor. She's gotten all of these awards and everything for her acting, and for her to leave, well, not even leave, but to add to her life all of the additional things she was doing to help other people. And they were saying, well, you know, how do you describe yourself? And what she came up with is, she said, I'm a life changer. And when she said that, it just resonated with my spirit, because I thought about all of the many things that I do to change lives. And I thought about the community service work that I do with the Department of Human Services. I thought about my massage therapy practice. I thought about my work with the homeless. And I couldn't think of another word that would describe all of those things except life changer. And so when I heard it, I'm like, this is it. This is my title from now on.
Right. Something just clicked and you said, that is it.
Yes.
Well, how do you change people's lives?
Well, I do it in so many ways. I would say touching is one of the major ways.
Literally touching.
And not so literally touching. Because in my massage therapy practice, people come to me and they're in all kinds of pain, discomfort, physically and emotionally. Sometimes they come and don't even know that there's anything wrong with them. They just happen to meet me someplace. I might be doing an event or something, and they, you know, I talk about the benefits of massage, and then they just make an appointment because they thought something special about me. Then they get on the table, and when they feel how they are not the same when they get off of the table, then they're like, oh my God, you just really changed my life. And, you know, after maybe about 5 or 6 people telling you that, you begin to look and say, oh, could this possibly be true? But now that it's been 12 years later and I've massaged over 3,000 people and I've heard it over and over and over again, I figure, hey, it must be true.
Right.
And then you see it. You see the evidence in people's lives, like, say, with my, not my massage therapy practice, but when I work with the homeless. And I go into a homeless shelter where there are women there with their children. They've, you know, for whatever reason, ended up in a homeless shelter. And then after, say, a 4 or 6 week sessions of, you know, basically life coaching and personal development training, you see that person on the streets, you know, catching the bus, and they see me walking down the street. Miss Kinnebrew, let me tell you what happened. I don't live in a shelter anymore. I have my own apartment. You know, my kids have a backyard to play in. That's changing a life.
Right, right. And again, that's very gratifying as well, right?
Oh, most definitely. It is.
Right. Well, I think that's one thing that runs through a lot of my guests, is when they really help people, they feel so much better about themselves as well.
Yes.
Do you feel the same about yourself whenever you can help people?
I definitely feel that way. It's a win-win, mm-hmm. and that's always good. But most of all, what I know is that I'm here for a purpose. I did not just show up in my mom's belly for no reason.
Yeah, right. You're not here just to take up space,
no,
right?
No space taken up for this young lady. I know that I have a purpose. I know that I'm supposed to touch lives. I didn't know necessarily that I was supposed to change lives. When I went to massage school, I knew that touching was going to be a very important part of my life. I knew that as a child, my grandmother raised me. And so my grandmother would have me come and rub on her knees, rub on her back. You know, she'd tell me about her arthritis. She'd tell me about all of the pain and discomfort she was experiencing, and I had no clue as a child that it would mean as much. But when I became an adult, and after working a 23-year career in retail, I moved from a stock person all the way up to a district sales manager, running 22 stores in 3 states, working about 60 hours a week and losing my mind.
Yes, that's a lot of hours.
Yeah. I was going crazy, but to some degree that was gratifying as well, because I still found a way to help people. Because, you know, when you're a district sales manager, it's not just about you doing the sales work so much. You're developing managers. You're taking people who may have just had a couple of years experience in a sales field, and you develop them into management personnel. Mm-hmm. And you teach them how to interact with their assistant managers and their salespeople and that type of thing. So you turn them into leaders. And so with that, I felt like I was changing lives to some degree as well. But it became so stressful because it required so much of my time and energy. And I knew that I, too, needed to have some fulfillment in the process, you know, because when you're giving from an empty cup, then, my God, you know, there's nothing else there. And that is kind of what led me to my homeless experience, my own personal homeless experience. It's just really my cup was empty. Mm-hmm. I didn't have anything else to give, and I lost my mind.
Mm-hmm. Literally? I mean, did you go through a depression, or did you have to be hospitalized or anything
like that? Yes, I did. I almost committed suicide. I thought, you know, that it was my objective to kill myself. I was going to drive off a bridge. I ended up in a parking lot at a church. Didn't know how I got there, just crying, sobbing. The radio was still on, and I heard a commercial that asked, you know, if you've ever thought about committing suicide or something like that, and it said call this number. And right then on the spot, I called a hotline number, and I'm still sobbing, you know, uncontrollably. And the person on the other end told me to, you know, call. I mean, they took my information, told me to come to Henry Ford Hospital. I ended up going into Henry Ford Hospital, and I had to be placed on medication. I was, you know, I can't remember. Zoloft, I think, is what I was taking. And they diagnosed me with PMDD, premenstrual dysphoric disorder. And primarily, you know, what that meant is that during, I would say, 1 week prior to my monthly time, I would just get these really highs and these extreme lows. I didn't want to get out of bed. I just cried continuously. You know, people asked me what was wrong. I had no clue. I didn't know. I just wanted to cry, you know. Mm-hmm. I just didn't feel like my life was worth living. I didn't feel like I had any control over my life. And I just didn't want to be here because I didn't know myself the way I was. When I looked in the mirror, I didn't even see myself. And just imagine coming from the position of traveling all over the country and, you know, training people and that type of thing, and being in that position to not having any control of your life whatsoever. Mm-hmm. That was really a sad situation. I almost saw a monster when I looked in the mirror. Right. And so the medication, I was only on that medication, I would say, less than 30 days, because the wonderful thing about it is because I had gone through massage therapy training. I graduated from Irene's Maya Massology Institute, and during that period of time, it's a 1-year program, I learned so many tools. I learned the art of meditation. I learned about yoga. I learned the importance of music therapy. So I utilized some of those tools once my mind was clear enough to do so, because, you know, when you're crazy, when I was crazy, I couldn't think that clearly. But as soon as the clouds got lifted somewhat, I went back to those things that I knew, and then I sought out other, I would say, holistic practitioners. And And, you know, these are friends of mine who I trusted, and I didn't feel that they would take advantage of me. And they were able to really help me to go back all the way into my childhood and deal with some things that I had pushed way back from living in Detroit, you know, when I was a child, because I left Detroit when I was, I'd say, 12 years old, and I moved to Birmingham, Alabama. And then I moved to Washington, D.C. And so I had been gone since I was 12. But when I came back, because my dad was sick with cancer, and I came back to care for him, all of these things started coming back again. And I just had no clue what it was really all about. And those therapies, those energy healing therapies, I did Transcending the Matrix, I did body talk therapies, and then massage as well. And those therapies just helped me to just really shift through all of those things that were just in my mind and controlling me and just keeping me from really being at my best. And it was all for a purpose. I would say that, you know, I wouldn't change a thing. I really would not. I mean, I tell everybody I lost my mind so I could get a new one.
And the new one's working out pretty well,
is it? The new one is working out extremely well. I've never been so happy in my entire life.
Well, sometimes they say you have to have a breakdown in order to have a breakthrough. Do you feel that's what happened to you?
Oh, most definitely. I definitely had that breakdown. And just last night, I was at a restaurant, and the young lady that was taking care of me, she was like, you know, she said, I had a creative, she said she had a creative breakdown. I'm like, wow, what a way to describe it. That was very interesting to me. And she said it took her about 5 years to get her life back together. And I told her, wow, that's amazing, because it took me about that long to get my life back together after being homeless. But during that time, the introspection, the work that I had to do internally, it basically put me in a position to assist so many more people. And I believe that that was my purpose for going through it, because it's like, okay, you say that you want to help people. You say you want to touch the world. You say you want to reach out. But do you understand what these people are really experiencing? And it's very hard to assist someone when you have no clue the trauma or turmoil that's going on in their mind or in their lives. And I had not, even though, like I said, I was born and raised pretty much in Detroit, on the east side, in the projects, you know, but I don't remember that as being a bad thing, because I was a child and my grandmother took very good care of me. I don't remember, the only thing that I remember was the traumatic experiences of my mom being mentally ill and being gang raped. And I saw some terrible things with her. I saw the syringes being left around with the, you know, drugs and stuff like that. And those things, because I didn't see them in any other scenarios of my life, I pushed them to the side. And then when I saw them maybe on television, then it sparked something. I'm like, wait a minute, that looks familiar. But when I was going through this whole transition, I called my sister and I started telling her about these things, these visions that were coming back. She said, oh, yes, those things definitely happened, because I couldn't believe it. But they did happen. But I just, like I said, I pushed them to the back because I didn't want to deal with it. I didn't want to face what it was really all about. And facing it helped me to really understand, number one, I don't ever want to be there. I don't want to be on that side, a recipient, a person experiencing the drug abuse or anything like that. And definitely I knew that I had a fear of losing my mind. I had a fear of mental illness. Now I embrace it, because I don't consider it mentally ill like the doctors describe it. I consider it more like that young lady said to me last night, as having a creative breakdown.
Whatever works, you know. Briefly, I just want to remind everybody that this is WHFR.FM, the station making waves. This program is Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway. And this month, my special guest is Varsandra Kinnebrew. And again, she's a life changer, and you have had quite a life. I mean, you've gone through a lot of changes yourself. Now, when you started the massage therapy, was that after or before you had the nervous breakdown, so
to speak? It was before. It was at the point when my career, I knew there was a time for a change. I knew that I was being overworked. I knew that I did, my personal life, my family life was being basically, it was being affected in a negative way. I was raising my two brothers, and they were, one was, I got custody of him when he was a year and a half old, and at that time, I think he was about 14. He was needing a lot more of my attention because he was going through that whole teenage period of time when, you know, teenagers need a little bit extra care and stuff.
And how old were you at this time?
Well, I was, when I had this experience, it was 38.
Okay.
Yes. And so, but I started raising him at 23. Mm-hmm. So, and I had no children of my own.
Right. Well, no, that's a lot for a person to be going through and what you've described in your childhood. Now, your sister also remembers those same things. Mm-hmm. So, obviously, once you realized that those things did happen in the past, how did you overcome those? How did you explain those things to yourself and move on?
Well, I don't think it was so much an explanation as much as it was really going back to the faith that was instilled in me by my grandmother. My grandmother was just really an anchor. She was a strong woman that always taught us that there was no problems that were too big that we couldn't handle. You know, she would say the things like, God wouldn't put anything on you that you couldn't bear, and those type of things. And I have a very strong church background. So I was in church, and I would say that my faith is really what kept me through that process. And I knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that there was something great. I knew there was something great that I was supposed to do in this world, and that it was just a matter of a period of time that I was going to have to go through to reach this time in my life where I was going to, you know, basically stand in my purpose. And so I was constantly seeking. I was constantly seeking truth. I was constantly looking at any way possible to see God in his greatness, his or her greatness, however you want to describe it. I just knew that there was something great there, and I said, I'm just going to keep seeking after that, and then it'll all be revealed to me. So I didn't really, I never took it as a negative, a totally negative thing. I knew something great was coming on the other end. I would tell you this, even in the homeless shelter, I was teaching relaxation therapies to the other people who lived in a homeless shelter. I mean, they actually had me to what they call life skills workshops. They had me to teach life skills workshops, and I was a homeless resident.
Yeah, well, that is odd, but still, I mean, you were helping people even at that time, right?
Yeah.
Well, that's important.
I attend Transforming Love Community. I'm not sure if you've ever heard of that, Reverend Shahira. And she, you know, she was, you know, sharing her message one day. And she said, Versandra is such a loving and giving person. Even when she was homeless, she gave free massages to people who were in need. And she says, and I was one of those people.
Yeah, right.
You know, it's just my nature. I don't know any other way, you know.
Now, you had your breakdown, and then you went to the hospital after that time. Is that when you entered the shelter?
Yes, it was after that time is when I realized I had to have help. Some type of major intervention had to take place. I couldn't handle it on my own. And so I went, I called the shelter. I called, it was the Coalition on Temporary Shelter. Everybody knows it as COTS around here. And so they told me they didn't have a place. Again, I had to trust in my faith. And I went to the facility that, you know, I was looking to move into for a period of, a period of time. I figured maybe 30, 60 days, you know, just a little bit of support, just something to help me. I took my car that I had at the time because, you know, every day I was getting up wondering if the repo man had come to pick it up. So I was looking out the window and that was causing me stress, of course. So I finally, I took the car back to Ford Motor Company. Here, you know, I can't pay it. I just can't pay it, and I don't want to stress anymore. I'll walk, whatever I have to do. I'm not going to run around trying to hide the car like people I knew were doing. And I just, I wanted to relieve myself of as much stress as possible so that I could really go inside of myself, do some introspection, really listen and hear what it was that I needed to be getting from this experience, because I didn't want to come back to it. And I believe that if you don't deal with certain things, if you don't just look the problem or situation in the eye, stand up to it, and call it what it is, then you'll never really, you know, be free of it. Mm-hmm. It'll come back. Even if it goes away temporarily, it'll keep coming back. Right. And there were some things that I needed to see, like managing my finances. Mm-hmm. I needed to look at the fact that even though I only made about $500 a month, I mean, anybody would say, oh, nobody could live off of $500 a month. Well, actually, there are some ways. Uh-huh. You know, you can get a room, you know, right. But that wasn't an option for me because I'd never lived in a room before. But as when you become homeless, you start looking at options you never saw before.
Right.
But there were things that I had to learn about. So now when I'm coaching young ladies who are in transition, I have the options to share with them. Mm-hmm. You know, I can say there are boarding houses all over the place around the city of Detroit. I could say that you can find a place to stay for about $250 a month. And if you do make $500 a month, you can find a way to save an additional, if you had to say $20 until you got to that higher amount. And that there's some things that you do not have to have. I thought right. I had to have a car. Mm-hmm. Until I realized, wait a minute, a car is a luxury,
right?
You know,
right.
But because I had one since I was 16, mm-hmm. I didn't really think of it that way. I just thought I was supposed to have one.
Right. You know? Took it for granted.
Exactly. I took it for granted. But this period of time helped me to really just get a new perspective about things and the way that I thought about those things, you know.
Mm-hmm. So basically, you had to start over from square one then, right?
Yes, I did. And I would say square minus one.
Oh, really?
I was negative.
Wow. Yeah.
Because, you know, let me tell you, people, when a person becomes homeless, it's not just a one-issue type deal. It's not just they don't have a home.
Mm-hmm.
For you to become homeless, I'm just going to get real with you. You've written bad checks. Your account is overdrawn. You have gas, electric bills that have been, you know, the stuff has been shut off,
mm-hmm.
which means that you have an outstanding balance. So I'm talking negative, negative, negative. And I'm talking, if you were to have to get your gas and electric cut back on, not only do you have to pay the outstanding balance, but you also have to pay deposits because now your credit rating is shot, so they require that you pay these additional deposits.
Right.
I mean, it really gets to be a lot. And for you to get back on your feet, you have to come from a negative back to zero and then try to move to the positive.
Right.
So it is a huge issue.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like it. I mean, it sounds like it'd be very easy just to give up and say, to heck with it, I will remain homeless because perhaps it's simpler to deal with.
Exactly. And that's what you see today. You see so many people who have moved beyond just being homeless to hopeless, and they see no other options. And when you try to give them an idea that there's something else on the other side, there's like, oh, you know, you can't tell me there's anything else. I know my situation. You don't know. And I'm not going to take my time to tell you because you don't even understand what I'm going through.
Right.
And I believe that that's one of the benefits that I have when I'm speaking with people is because I can speak real and say, I've been there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not just telling you something somebody told me or something I read in a book. I'm telling you my personal experience. And I know that your life can be changed. And I know that things can turn around for you.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, that's very important. Like you said, you know, you've walked the walk and you know what's going on and all your advice is from the heart, right?
Yes, it's definitely from the heart. And the thing is, this is so important to me. When you get to that point, your self-esteem is so low. You believe that your worth is zero.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have any clue or if you believe in any kind of way that, you know, some people believe that they were created. Some people believe that whatever your beliefs are, you know that you came from something other than, you know, what you are today. Some people say they came from dust. Some people mm-hmm. say, yeah. You know, whatever you want to believe, but you know that you came from something that was almost nothingness into something that is in existence.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, if you believe that, then you know that you can change from wherever you are to something different. You can be, you know, some people want to use the word reincarnate, some people say reinvent, you know, but you can become something new.
Right.
And if you believe that, then you know, then it's just a matter of learning what that process is. Mm-hmm. And that's why, I know you haven't asked me about it, but my new book, The Art of Reinventing You, is like so important to me, because that's exactly what I talk about, is that whole reinvention process. And that goes even beyond my first book, Thank God for the Shelter, Memoirs of a Homeless Healer, because that one was specifically about my homeless experience. And it was really designed to give people that are in any type of life transition period the tools, 8 simple steps that I embraced that helped me to get my life back on track. But beyond that is the reinvention process. And sometimes getting back on track is not an option, because sometimes you have to wipe the slate clean and you start from zero. And that reinvention basically causes you to ignite your imagination, because that's what the newness comes from. It comes from thoughts in your mind. Mm-hmm. And those thoughts become, you know, manifested based on your beliefs, your understandings, you know, and your dreams, the things that you surround yourself with. I mean, they become manifested. And so that's really what this book is all about. It's, you know, not believing that what you see is all that there is, but igniting that imagination to what you want it to be.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you were in the shelter, at what point did you realize that you had to reinvent yourself and continue on with your life? And at that time, did you realize your mission, or did that happen perhaps several months down the road?
Well, what happened was, while I was in the shelter, the interactions that I had with the ladies and especially the children, mm-hmm. is really what helped me to understand what I needed to do beyond the shelter. The children that were, I would say, were being abused by their parents, the negligence that took place as a result of their parents being so filled with stress, under, you know, just enormous amounts of stress, trying to figure out, of course, how to take care of themselves and then try to take care of 3, 4, 5 children even. So I'm looking at this and I'm looking at, how did it get that way? And so basically, I looked at the abuse that some of the women had encountered that caused them to be in their situations. I looked at the lifestyles that some of their parents' parents had lived. And those were the only examples. They were the only teachers for them. So basically, they were just repeating what they saw. Mm-hmm. They weren't, you know, that's what they learned.
Right.
So they were doing what they knew. And I'm looking at those things and I'm saying, I see that there is a place for me here, because that's, you know, why I decided life coaching is a way that I can enhance my therapeutic or holistic practices, is by adding life coaching. Because we in psychology, they talk about this nurture versus nature, you know, and they talk about how a person can be nurtured into a certain way of life or way of being. And that's really what I saw. You know, it wasn't, they didn't come out being bad people. They didn't come out being negligent or abusive people. They were nurtured into that.
Right.
So I said, wait a minute, if they could be nurtured into that, then they can be nurtured into something different. And so that's why I decided, hey, I'm going back to school. I'm going to study mental health. And because I believe that's a major part of, you know, really dealing with the issue there. And then I learned a lot about psychology. I learned about sociology. And that's, you know, where I'm headed toward, because I believe that there are some cultural issues that are going on that are almost pre-designed. I mean, I'm just going to be, you know, blunt about it. And I believe that if we recognize and are able to look them in the face and deal with them on a real level, then a lot of change will be able to be made. So I just looked at all of those things, and I know I can't fix the world. I mean, I can't heal the world. I can't, right. You know, I don't have a magic wand. I can't just wave it and say, oh, the world's going to be a fantastic place and nobody's going to ever go through trouble.
Right.
But
right.
I can do my part.
Right.
You know.
Right. Well, that's just it. I mean, you have to start somewhere, and that's mm-hmm. the important thing. Mm-hmm. Once again, I just want to remind everybody that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. You're listening to Metaphysically Speaking. I'm Mike Holloway. My special guest this month is Fersandra Kinnebrew. And, wow, like I said, you've had an interesting life. But I think the fact that you finally established some type of idea of where you wanted to go, mm-hmm. that was really the direction where you knew that this is how you can help people. And mm-hmm. since then, you've just continued on one step at a time?
Mm-hmm. One step at a time. I take opportunities kind of as they come. You know, I don't really go out looking to do something extra because people look at my life and they say, my God, you do 10,000 things.
Right. You're a very busy lady. I mean, I can tell. I mean, you've gotten, you know, awards from the city of Detroit. You work for the city of Detroit. I mean, you volunteer for them. So you're very busy. Do you ever get tired? I mean, it sounds to me like when you're working all those hours in retail, you got kind of burnt out, mm-hmm. but you don't feel the same with what you're doing right now. You feel energized?
I feel energized. I only do what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
I have one job that I work maybe 16 hours a week.
Yeah, that's not too bad.
I work at the museum, and I love art. I love people. So that is the only job that I am committed to going and punching a clock on. And I don't feel that that's even a job. But every day that I get up, I have, of course, some appointments because, you know, you have to have some structure.
Right.
But I get up doing what I want to do that makes me feel good. And I just happen to be helping other people in the process.
Right.
So it doesn't seem like work to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think of it that way. You know, I surround myself with people who love and care for me, who support me, who encourage me, and those type of things. And then when I spend time with people who are less fortunate, I give them every bit of extra love that I have. I shower them with it. I mean, I'm very knowledgeable, and I understand that people are going to, you know, try to pull the wool over your eyes. They're going to do certain things and stuff, but I throw it out there anyway, and I let them know, listen, you've got 100% of my love and light until you screw me.
Yeah, right. Then forget it. It's over.
You know?
No, yeah.
I mean, I totally understand where you're coming from because I understand that a person who is in survival mode, basically, what they're looking for is survival.
Right.
I mean, hook or crook, however they have to get it, they will steal, rob, kill, you know, and it's a sad thing, but this is the mindset of that person because they're just trying to make it through the next moment, the next day. And sometimes there are people that I try to assist that try to take from me.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand where they're coming from, and I only give them enough space to take so much. And, you know, I'm like, okay, you give what you can afford to lose.
Right.
I learned that from my dad.
Uh-huh.
You know, he's like, hey, you know, don't ever go out loaning people money and stuff like that. Because if you can't afford to lose it, then you'll be hurt when you don't
right.
get it back.
Right. Well, you feel bad. You know, I know Oprah Winfrey has often said that, you know, once you lend somebody something, you have to be ready not to get paid back. I mean, you have to accept that in essence, you've given them a gift.
Exactly.
You know? So that's what you have to expect.
That's what I look at.
But I think what you're saying is you really appreciate when people are honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that what you ask of other people?
Yes, that's exactly what I've asked of them. I ask them to be honest. You know, I don't even ask to help them if they don't want the help.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't offer something to someone that they didn't ask for up front.
Right.
You know, I'm reminded this summer there was a young lady sitting on the steps of the the Masonic Temple down across from Cass Park, and she was a homeless young lady, and she was just looking so sad and so hopeless. And I walked over to her and I said, hey, why are you sitting over here by yourself? And she's like, do you really want to know? I'm like, yeah. So I sat down beside her, and you know, we had a long conversation. She was telling me about her mom being bipolar, how she kicked her out, she had a baby, her 1-year-old baby was taken away from her. summer. She was living in a shelter. You know, she just wanted a way to make some money so she can get her baby back. And so I gave her an option for that. We sat down. I pulled out a piece of paper. I said, let's write this down. What is it going to take for you to get your baby back? And we came up with a number. $1,500 is what she needed to earn between now and January. I think her birthday is January 14th. And, you know, I have multiple streams of income because that's one of the things I learned being homeless. And so besides, you know, doing social media training, I sell candles. I only, you know, sell products that I feel empower and enlighten and illuminate people's lives. So
right, well, those are candles, so, they enlighten the world.
Hey, that's for sure. So I was telling her about my candle business, and I said, you know what, you could sell, and I told her, if you sell 3 candles a day between now and then, you would raise your money. I said, so could you get up every single day thinking, if I sell these 3 candles, I'm working to get my baby back? And I made it very clear, it's that simple. Every single day, 3 candles. Oh yes, I could do this. Okay, if you can do that, then what I will also offer to you, I will teach you social media so that you can be my assistant and help me with some of the clients that I have. Oh, I could do that too. I mean, it lasted a good maybe week. And then after that, she gave up. I mean, I can't help someone who doesn't want to help themselves.
Right. Well, that's the thing. If a person's not ready to receive help, they will not go by what you suggest or anybody else, even though it's for their better good. Especially, would think, if nothing else, she'd be motivated to get her child back.
Exactly. And what I was motivated to do, and this is a great thing, I love this came up, I was motivated to move into a condo on the Detroit River. I had a dream about it when I was in the shelter.
Yes.
And I was motivated to that, and that's what drove me. I'm going to own a condo on the Detroit River. That's what I was shooting for every single day.
Right. But did you literally have a dream about it?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I literally had a dream about it, that I woke up and I looked out and I was looking on the water.
Right.
I didn't know if it was the Detroit River, but it was water. And I know that water brought me peace. And I know that whenever I walk down on the riverfront, I just got this sense of just, you know, peace and tranquility. So water was very, very, very important to me. And so I just kept going down to the Detroit River trying to find that peace and tranquility that I felt in a dream. And then I just made up in my mind that this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to live here on the river. So every single day when I wake up, it's not going to be to look at these walls and to share a bathroom with 8 other families and share a kitchen with, 14 people, you know, cooking in the same kitchen, because that was the living arrangement there. I'm going to have my own, and every day I will be at peace. So that's what was in my mind.
Right. Well, again, if you wake up, you look at the water, that really starts your day off in a very positive way, right?
Yes, it does. It does. It, you know, water is what, you know, does it for you.
Yeah.
And it's even better when you can go up to the penthouse and look out and see all the way to the Ambassador River and, I mean, bridge and down to the other direction. Right. I mean, it's awesome.
Right. Well, it's great whenever your dreams come true, and I think that's fascinating because, you know, I've known of several people that literally have dreams about things, it comes true. And when this happened for you, did you know that you were on the right path, that you were really headed in the right direction? Again, it's another goal that you achieved, and that inspired you to keep going?
Yes, exactly. And before I actually moved into my condo on the river, I moved as close to the river as I could be. And I lived in these, it was a high rise that, you know, had a lot of transient people. It wasn't the best place to live, but it got me close to where I wanted to be.
Right.
And it was affordable and in my, you know, my budget. And then someone who came to the DIA where I work that read my first book because I wrote about it. And that was another part of what I teach. You know, whatever it is that you want to manifest, you have to write, speak, and visualize it.
Right.
So I wrote it in that book. And this gentleman said, looks like you want a condo on the river. I said, yes, I do. He's like, do you have one in mind? I said, yeah, I want to move into riverfront condominiums. They were $181,000. I'm like, you know, but I still want to do it. You know, I'm going to manifest my condo on the river. I was going there and the people in sales just knew me. You know, they threw me the keys every day when I walked by so I can go and look in the model and sit down in there and visualize myself in my condo on the river. But the condo that I actually got, I purchased it for $6,000.
Wow. Quite a difference from $181,000.
Yes. So the universe knew that right. If you did get the 181, you might not keep it long because you couldn't afford it.
Right.
But
right.
The 6,000 made it easy for me to manage the lifestyle that I knew I wanted to live,
right.
Which is being able to help other people without an expense or overhead that was so great that it would force me into going back to working 60 hours a week.
Right.
You know what
right.
I'm saying?
And then you'd be back right where you started.
Back to the rat race.
Mm-hmm.
So this way, I was able to pay cash for the condo.
Right.
All I had to do at that point is maintain the taxes and the association fees and live the carefree, wonderful life that mm-hmm. I live today.
Right. Well, that's excellent. Mm-hmm. I know you're very big on affirmations.
Yes.
And you know, tell other people that they should come up with their own and stuff. So do you make new affirmations every day or perhaps every few weeks?
Not every day or every few weeks. I do them after they've been manifested.
Okay.
I stick with the same ones until it is there, you know.
Right.
I have my current affirmation, you know. I say, I am wealth beyond measure. I earn millions and I give millions away to worthy causes. Every single day, I say that over and over again throughout my day.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I had to tweak it a little bit because I used to say, I will have wealth beyond measure. And one day I was saying that out of my mouth and I realized the power of words. And I'm like, no, I will not have it. I already am it.
Right.
I am the wealth that I am seeking. I don't need to look for it. It is already inside of me. My gifts mm-hmm. and talents and abilities that I already have will earn me millions.
Right.
And I will give millions away because I don't want money just to sit it somewhere on a shelf and look at it and make, you know, it's pretty. Mm-hmm. You know, admire it.
Right. Or you can buy nice things with it, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah, but I want wealth so I could help more people. And I don't want to just help them by throwing money at them. I want to help them by showing them, introducing them to a lifestyle that will allow them to earn their own, because it's nothing like earning your own.
Right.
I mean, seeing the fruits of your labor right before your eyes, just being manifested into whatever it is you desire, is the greatest thing that I think a human being can accomplish. So I just want to help people find their passion, whatever it is that makes you happy, that allows you to live the same type of lifestyle that I live, that is not stressful or anything. Everybody has gifts and talents.
Right.
Just tap into those gifts and talents and find a way to allow those gifts and talents to earn you the money that it takes for you to live the lifestyle you want to live. It's that simple.
Right.
So that's what I want to do.
Right. Well, I think in people's heart of hearts, they know what it is they really want to do, mm-hmm. but sometimes it's hard to take action steps in order to do those things. But I want to say, I think it sounds like you're really on the right track, because a lot of things I've read about acquiring wealth is just not making it, but also be willing to give it away mm-hmm. to help other people mm-hmm. and not just, you know, give it to your friends and family. That's mm-hmm. okay. But to actually help organizations mm-hmm. and larger groups of people. Mm-hmm. And I think it's great that you feel that way. So that is definitely one of your goals.
Yes,
right?
That's for sure. That is one of my goals. I study. There's a gentleman, Robert Allen, and I'm sure you probably heard of Mark Victor Hansen.
Mm-hmm, yes.
Chicken Soup for the
right.
Soul.
Oh, yes.
And they have, they've written, there was one book that I read while I was homeless. and I read it as a result of watching Oprah. You mentioned that earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Oprah Winfrey had those two gentlemen on their show, and they made $1 million in 1 minute on the show, and they gave it to Oprah's charity.
Uh-huh.
And they did it on the internet, selling a training program. And ever since then, I've been following the path that they've laid. And they wrote about this in the book, The 1 Minute Millionaire. And so since then, there's been a sequel to that, and it's called Cash in a Flash. And so, but both of those books are books that share the analytical side of wealth and how it has to be managed and how you have to grow it and having multiple streams of income, all of those things. But then it's also a novel where it's showing a fictional story that's based on some of their what they call mastermind training programs that they do with people to show them how to create wealth. And so they tell these stories, and I'm a, you know, right brainer, and I take the stories and I can understand those a lot better than I can the analytical side. But I've also learned that the two have to meet. They have
right,
to have
yes.
a nice, happy marriage.
Yes, right. Well, you have to really pay attention to the numbers and stuff. You mm-hmm. may not want to, but you know, again, if you want to get a handle on your money, you, like you said, you have mm-hmm. to handle both sides, you know. I mean, it's great to have all these ideas on how to make money, but you also have to be practical as well.
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, one of the ways, and I love sharing this story, one of the ways that I got my money managed a lot better was, you know, going to a credit union, you know, and just opening up an account and starting from zero. You know, they'll let you open up a savings account, you know, $25. You know, you open up a savings account, you do a collateralized loan first, and then you go to a non-collateralized loan, and before you know it, you can sign on a piece of paper and get $10,000, $20,000 based on your ability to pay.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was the process that I went through, and that's what I did to get out of debt, you know. And so when people ask me, you know, how can you start with a negative and get yourself back on track when you don't make any more money? Well, you build your credit rating by taking small loans, paying on time, showing that you are trustworthy.
Right.
And before you know it, listen. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So, yes, I learned all of those things, though, from these books. And I believe that it's important that people, even if you can't get a personal mentor that you can sit in front of and talk to and that they can walk you through the process, your virtual mentors are, they're vast, you know, either on the internet or through books. Find you a virtual mentor, somebody who you don't have to see, touch, feel, or anything like that, but you can read and follow their processes. That's why I want to be a virtual mentor to a lot of people myself through my books.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that that's happening because I get emails from people all over the country that are telling me, oh my God, I read your book, and this is what I started as a result of it, and this is what's happening. And I'm like, yes, I'm doing it too.
Right. Well, again, that's got to make your day to hear information like that.
Yes.
I mean, that's a great way to start your day. If you know that without even touching somebody, without even really knowing them, you are helping them immensely.
Yes. Yes. It feels so good. And it keeps me going. It keeps
right.
me motivated.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Again, I just want to mention that this is WHFR.FM, the station making waves. You're listening to Metaphysically Speaking. I'm Mike Holloway. My special guest this month is Varsandra Kinnebrew. And now, when you help people, what's their reaction to you? Again, you said earlier that if they're ready to accept your message, they will. Now, once you work with somebody, do you work with them for a number of months, or is there no set time? How does that work?
There's no set time, especially when I am donating my services, because mm-hmm. it's as long as they want it and as long as they reach out. If they reach out, I'm reaching back because I really want to help as many people as I can. In my coaching practice, it's, you know, for whatever length of time they retain my services. So I have clients who do, say, telecoaching.
Mm-hmm.
I've worked just recently with a young lady in Atlanta, Georgia, who just wanted a 4-hour coaching, telecoaching program. And, you know, she goes to my website, she pays for the program for 4 hours. You know, she could do that within a week or however length of time that she decides on. But pretty much her task was she wanted to be a self-published author.
Mm-hmm.
And because that's something I've done before, I could take her through the process. I could connect her with the people that she needed, different websites, different resources. And so that's what we did. After those 4 hours were done, she had an option of whether she wanted to continue coaching or not. She hasn't to this day continued her coaching, but she follows me on my Facebook page and she gets all of the tips and tools because I do a blog. I do all of those type of things to support people because I understand everybody doesn't have money to necessarily pay for the coaching that I provide. So, you know, whether they're paying or not, there's something out there in whatever topic it is that they want. If they're interested in the homelessness, you know, moving from homelessness to self-sufficiency, if they're just looking for how do I transition from a tough place to, you know, prosperity, if they're looking for, you know, writing a book, if they're even looking for being a coach, you know, there's all of those things are out there on the internet. And so, you know, a lot of people just, that's all they want to do is just get free material. And right. I'm good with that too, mm-hmm. you know, because I believe that I'm planting seeds every time I do that. And of course, you got a lot of seeds planted. You expect the harvest at some point
that's
in time.
That's right. That's right. Further on down the road. But mm-hmm. no, that's right. I mean, sometimes you have to help people in order to grow, but then somewhere along the line, there's going to be a payoff for
yes.
you. But I mean, eventually too, I would imagine you won't have to work at the DIA anymore, that
right.
you'll be able to do what you love full time, and that's your ultimate goal, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, it is. It is. And, you know, for right now, like I said, that is a paid internship to me because what I am doing, I am watching a multi-million dollar nonprofit organization run like clockwork.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is, I don't even know, this organization is the epitome of a well-run nonprofit. And that's what I get from going there besides the beautiful art.
Right. So everything is a learning experience.
It's a learning experience. And like I said, about perspective, some people choose, I mean, I work with people who complain every day about walking in those doors.
Right.
I tune them out and then I go to what am I getting from this?
Mm-hmm.
And not just what I'm getting from a paycheck, but what am I getting beyond the paycheck?
Right.
Because I promised myself a long time ago that I would never work for money again.
Mm-hmm.
I don't just work for money. I like to get paid. I like to pay my bills. I like to travel. I like all those things, but I cannot work just for money because there's no... Because I know my value now. When I said that affirmation, I am immeasurable wealth, I believe that to my core. I believe nobody can pay me for what I'm worth. I really do believe that. And that's because many reasons. Now, it's not just an egotistical thing. First of all, it's because my passion and my love for whatever I do is so great that I'm going to give you back 10 times what it's worth. You
mm-hmm.
know what I'm saying? So you pay me $10 an hour for something that I know the value is $90 an hour, you know.
Right.
I mean, I would get upset if I really thought about it, you know, as far as my value and what
right.
I give back.
Right.
So, you know, I don't think of it that way. I think, you know, okay, this is an exchange, and then I'm looking at what else am I getting. Now, is that valuable enough for my time and attention
right.
as the way I look at
right.
it. And so, yes, it is, because being around the art, I mean, come on, I want to be a world traveler. And if I've been to maybe about 10 cities in the United States
mm-hmm.
besides Hawaii. And then I've been overseas one time to Japan, but through the arts, I'm able to go all over the world.
Right.
So when I finally go there in real life, not
yeah,
in one of my dreams.
It's just a matter of time, right?
Exactly. I can say, oh my God, I know this street in Venice because I've walked it many times before.
Right, right. Well, again, you mentioned reincarnation. That happens sometimes. People go to European countries or wherever, and they seem to remember that, well, this is around this corner and this is over here. They can't explain it. They've never been there, but they've said that sometimes it's past life memories that mm-hmm. you remember this kind of stuff.
Exactly, exactly. And I'm open to all of that.
Yeah, right. The more traveling, the better, right?
Yes,
yeah,
yes.
That's very important. How can people get in touch with you if they so choose to?
Well, I have many, many, many online contacts, so I won't go down the list.
Okay.
What I will do is, because my most important thing is the Art of Reinventing You book that's new, coming out 11-11-11, very important day.
Yes.
And so
very important numerically.
Yes,
you know.
For sure. And I believe it's going to be more than numerically. I believe physically it'll be very important and very prosperous as well.
Mm-hmm.
So at the Virgil Carr Cultural Arts Center, I will be releasing my new book on that day. So they can go to, listeners can go to theartofreinventingyoubook.com. You can, on that website, you'll be able to find information, excerpts from the book. You'll see video of a recent interview that I had, you know, related to the book and that type of thing. And if you wanted to give me a call, 313-443-2571. That is my voicemail. And of course, you'll get a really nice inspirational message with some music.
Yeah, that's what you have on your phone every day?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, I love it because I want to give back every opportunity I have. So people call me and they're like, by the time they get to the voicemail or get to me, they're like, oh my God, I feel so much better now.
Right. Well, again, it's a simple thing that makes them feel wonderful right away. Again,
yes.
That's very reassuring, and you know, it's just nice for you to have that type of feedback.
Mm-hmm. And I don't get attitudes either when people call me.
Yeah, right. That's very important. Otherwise, you get an attitude.
Yes.
No, I'm sure you don't. But like you said, you can only work with people so much, and if they have an attitude, well, you just have to let things go. Because, I mean, it is important, I think you mentioned this earlier, about the people that surround you. You have to get the right people around you as well.
Exactly. You're right. And, you know, I just wanted to mention, too, because some people hear me speak and they think, oh, your life's perfect now. Everything's great. And I always want to make it clear that, guess what? My perspective and my perception is what's perfect. It's not that my life is, you know, I don't have any pitfalls or things that I run into, but because my perspective and my perception about things is perfect, I choose to find the good in every situation. So
mm-hmm.
I don't look for things at face value. So that's what's really, really changed in my life, because my PMDD did not go away.
Mm-hmm.
But
right.
I look at it differently, and I do not allow it to affect me in a negative way. I recognize it. When it comes, I take the time my body needs to deal with the transition, and I don't allow myself to deal with stress during that period of time,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Right.
So I do things differently. And so that's what we really have to learn how to do. And so then that way you're not worried about, oh, my life has to be perfect. No, my life doesn't have to be perfect. I just have to think perfectly about my life, you know? That's
yes.
very important for me
That's
to share.
That's a very
as well.
Different transition to
mm-hmm.
think about it like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because like you said, you can't always change yourself. I mean, physically anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to deal with it with a better attitude.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm thinking about my new car.
Oh, yeah? Okay. To drive to your condo.
Yes.
So that's great. You know, it all works together.
Yes.
I'm just kind of curious, how did you get the condo for $6,000?
It was nothing but a miracle. This gentleman, I got to tell you his story. He said he had been homeless prior to purchasing this condo himself. He said that he was a drug addict and an alcoholic, and he slept on storefronts. And he said one day he woke up, looked in the sky. He said, I don't want to live like this anymore. He went to the YMCA. He said he never went through this major recovery and got sent away for months, you know, and got recovered. He said he just threw up all over the place and laid in it, you
uh-huh,
know.
Right.
I mean, it was really something.
Right.
But he told me that story at the moment that we were signing, because prior to me signing the paperwork, he told me he was selling it to me for $20,000. He didn't tell me that I was only going to pay six until the contract. We were at the attorney's office in Southfield, Michigan, and he said that you're going to have to put $6,000 down, and then you have to pay all of these payments for a year until you pay the balance. And if you're late one time, then you've lost everything you put into it, and then I'll take the condo back. That's the arrangement that we made.
Mm-hmm.
But when he told me, I need you to read this contract very carefully and make sure you understand what it's saying to you, because if you're late, you're going to be late. And so when I read through the contract, I didn't see any payment information. I said, it doesn't say any of the things that we just discussed. You know, is there a mistake? He says, no. When you give me the $6,000, the condo is yours.
Wow.
And this is why.
That's great. Well, Versandra, thank you very much for being on the show. You were a very interesting guest. I mean, you've come through a lot. Sounds like you're on the right road and you're headed in the right direction. That's just really fantastic, and I wish you only the best of luck in the future.
Thank you so much, Mike.
Wow, what a show. The time has just flown by. It's been a great, great show. I want to thank my guest, Versandra Kennebrew, for being here. Very interesting story, and I really do wish her the best of luck in the future. I want to thank my producer, Brandon McKay, for helping me out on this edition of Metaphysically Speaking. Be sure to come back next month, Tuesday, November 15th, for another edition of the show. And there's something else that I want to mention, and that is coming up on Sunday, October 30th, from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m., will be the Celebration of Light Festival at the Clarion Inn, which is located at 2900 Jackson Avenue in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Admission to this event is only $8. This includes a healing crystal, along with $1 being donated to ovarian cancer research. There will be many vendors, readers, and body workers, at this fantastic event, along with some great speakers giving free lectures as well. Once again, that's the Celebration of Light Festival, Sunday, October 30th at the Clarion Inn in Ann Arbor from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. For more information, check out their website, and that is www.celebrationoflightfestival.com, and Celebration of Light Festival is all one word. Once again, that's www.celebrationoflightfestival.com. I want to thank everybody for listening to this edition of Metaphysically Speaking. Like I said, come back next month on the 15th of November. Have a great day, everybody.
From Allen Park, you're listening to WHFR Dearborn.
Yeah. 89.3 WHFR.FM invites you to tune in to the Flash Drive Jazz Show at its new day and new time, Saturday nights at midnight. Hello, this is Mark Anthony. I'm your host, and I'm inviting you to tune in every Saturday night at midnight for some great jazz music in the middle of the night. Join me as we explore brand new music and discover new artists that you've probably never heard. You can listen online at www.whfr.fm or at 89.3 on your FM dial in Dearborn. The Flash Drive Jazz Show every Saturday night at midnight on 89.3 WHFR.fm. We're making waves.
Who? The diva. What? Lyrical infusion. Where? On WHFR. 89.3 FM or www.whfi.fm, streaming live. You are invited Tuesdays from 2 to 4 p.m.